It is Locked On Jazz for the 24th of July. Happy Pioneer Day. Happy Karl Malone birthday. We've got a show to match it. Ron Boone and I sit down for the summer interview series. But first, I sit down with new Jazz member Emmanuel Mudiay to talk about his basketball journey. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making your offseason a lot better as a Jazz fan. You get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, and tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Hope you're having a great day in Utah. It's our state holiday, Pioneer Day. If you're listening outside Utah and you don't know what that is, you can Google it and figure it all out, but it's unique to just us. So I hope you're having a good time out with the family, getting the day off and enjoying Pioneer Day. Yesterday, I got a chance to sit down with Emmanuel Mudiay. His life story is truly incredible. He was in the Congo. His dad drops dead at a barbecue when he's, I think, a year old. His mom is trying, they're doing well. Then the civil war breaks out. Suddenly nothing's safe. His mom flees the country on her own to her sister in Dallas, where she waits for asylum. The kids then get moved out to another African country where it's safer, or at least part of what was Zaire and is now the Congo, to live with the grandparents. I don't think that works out. So then they're kind of bouncing around, and Emmanuel Mudiay spends his youth years waiting to know if he'll ever see mom again with a dad that's already passed. His two brothers, they eventually all end up in Dallas. I didn't get into that with him. Hopefully I'll get to know him a little bit and we can have that conversation as the year goes on and sit down and have that. It's pretty fascinating. In fact, it's really interesting is that Bojan Bogdanovic and Emmanuel Mudiay are both war refugees. Bosnia-Herzegovina civil war that took place in once was Yugoslavia is exactly when Bojan grew up. And then he got out to Europe via basketball. So interesting, you know, parallels in different places and then how it what happens. Bojan goes to Europe. Emmanuel Mudiay comes to Dallas living in pretty severe poverty, mom working three jobs to try to make ends meet. And then he ends up, as we'll touch on here, he ends up in high school going to the Deion Sanders Academy, but that school gets basically ruled athletically ineligible. So he doesn't play his junior and senior years of high school. And so we talk about this a little bit. We didn't get into it as much as possible. It's hard. I've never met him before, and I'm sitting down to talk to him for 7 minutes. And so hopefully you'll enjoy this conversation. And then segment two and segment three, Ron Boone will jump in. Locked On NBA is still continuing every day. Locked On NFL has guest hosts all week. It's been really fun. So if you need more podcasts this week, go grab a hold of that. Thank you very much to all of you that have been dropping the iTunes rankings. I sincerely appreciate it. It does make a big difference. And as I think I've mentioned before, those rankings have been kind of stunning to me on how positive they are and the appreciation. So that's me really trying to just give you a little bit of a thank you and probably should, you know, shout out a few people and give you that credit. In fact, let's do that. Let's impromptu shout outs are always a good thing. Let's do that very quickly before we go to the Emmanuel Mudiay. 866 people I'd have to shout out, but let's go with the most recent and then I'll work it. So special thanks to NetFurry44, who just on July 19th, great part of the team, five stars. Thank you very much. Doug Blast on July 11th, another five star. Thank you very much. White Iverson upset about we run too many ads. So you know what? I apologize, but we'll continue to give it to you for free. And McGavin Jay, thank you very much for the five stars. Super appreciate all of you guys with the iTunes reviews. That's very, very nice of you. All right, let's get it. Here's Emmanuel Mudiay and his conversation.
Here with Emmanuel Mudiay, and I think the first question everyone's got, why Utah? Yeah. Just because I felt like it was the best fit for me, and I felt like it was giving me a chance still as a young player to come and learn as much as I can. And Coach Snyder was definitely a big part of that as well. You know, talking to him, just hearing him out, I think it was almost like a college recruit type thing, but I trust him enough to make the decision that I made. And obviously the team, seeing the team that we have is definitely a very, very talented team. Probably one of the most talented team I've ever been on, if not the most talented.
There's a lot of different angles here, but one of the things is B.J. Armstrong, I believe, is your agent, which is different because B.J. Armstrong's a former player.
Right.
So how much was his kind of saying to you, Emmanuel, we need to take two steps back. Like, you could have probably got a starting job. Yeah. You probably could be playing 30 minutes a night. Yeah. How much was this him saying to you, you got to take a step backwards, and how hard was that to hear?
I wouldn't say it was necessarily hard. I would say when you look at the big picture of it, it's definitely a positive because this is going into my fifth year, and I've never really been on a winning team. No disrespect to the teams that I played on. It's just we were always young. I was always on a young team, and it was kind of always the same thing over and over again. And I kind of got to the point where it was like, man, I want to start winning games, you know, start tasting the playoffs a little bit, see how that is. And obviously, like you said, going to another team, I had opportunities to probably go to another team, get a starting position. But it was just like I had to take a step back to just – learn. And obviously Mike Conley was a big part of that. He was reaching out to me, we was talking, and he helped me make that decision very easy as well.
What did he tell you?
Just the opportunity that we have over here, you know, is special, and why not? I don't mind coming off the bench for a team that's going to be very willing to share accolades with each other. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is everybody wants the next person to succeed, and I think that's the vibe that I get from this team for sure.
At some point, hopefully you and I will sit down and talk about your world, because your life has been just incredible. Yeah. But let's just start at 14, where you probably had some normalcy. You're number two player in the country, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be roses and lollipops the rest of your basketball life. When did it get hard for the first time?
Probably my rookie year. Definitely my rookie year. It was just a lot different. But at the same time, I think the main thing, I'm very grateful that it did get hard, to be honest with you. I think it's made me who I am today. And in a way, I'm not somebody that's 30 years old right now. You know, I would have just been graduating college like last year, a year before that. So I had to go through, everybody has to go through their own little, you know, testimony, I guess you can say. So I kind of went through that my rookie year, you know, my whole time in Denver a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm no different than anyone else, right? You get picked, seventh. And you got this great body, and you come out, and I watch you, and you shoot 37%, and you're caught in the air, and you're throwing turnovers, and I'm like, what's wrong with him?
Yeah.
Okay, then we sign. Then I hear we're possibly talking to you, and then we sign. So I do a bunch of research.
Yeah.
All right. So you don't play high school basketball, basically, your junior and senior year, because the school you get basically eliminates school, right?
Yeah.
So you play a little AAU.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go to college because someone offers you $1 million. By the way, I'm taking it too.
Yeah.
And you play, what, about 15 games in China or 10 games?
12
games in China. So in other than AAU, you had played what? How many games had you played between your junior, senior, and year out of high school?
Not a lot. Yeah, not a lot.
But. And then you get thrown in as a starter in the NBA and you don't do well? Like, this is not surprising as I read this script.
Yeah. It's part of it, though. I think, like I said, I've played more basketball now, obviously, than I've played probably in high school. So it's definitely a learning curve that I had to go through. And, you know, last year was the first time I kind of started feeling like it's kind of coming into its own.
There's a bunch of interesting statistical things to your season last year that are very different than the first few years. But from a player, before I get into the numbers, from a player standpoint, what did you see differently? What did you feel differently last year in New York?
Opportunity. It's just going out there and having a chance. Having a coach that believes in you is definitely big. I think most of my coaches have believed in me. But, you know, David Fizdale, that is, with New York, the way he – you know, he encouraged me to do certain things, or he got on me with certain things. It was just a lot different, and he just let me go out there and make my mistakes, let me play, and it was fun.
From before you, I think you sprained your ankle,
yeah.
But before you sprain your ankle, you're the third best pick and roll guard in the NBA efficiency wise at that point in time. That was not something that had been particularly strong in Denver. What was it that you learned in that first portion of the game? And the reason I kind of stopped there is by the time you came back from the injury, you were playing with younger players and you weren't, wins weren't big on the Knicks' focus at that point. Up to that point of the season, what was it that allowed you to be so successful in the pick and roll?
I've always been comfortable playing in the pick and roll, honestly. It's just in Denver, I really didn't get a chance to because the all-star they got, which is Nikola, great friend of mine, great player. So obviously you had to run the plays through him, so which is very understandable. But I think pick and roll has always been one of my strongest things about basketball. That's one thing I love, and I love coming off the pick and roll, either getting my teammates involved or getting my own shot.
And I think Nurk was there your first year too, right? Yeah, so Nurk, a lot of big bodies.
He was hurt. Nurkic was hurt. He was hurt. He set out majority of my first year, and he came in late, and then he got traded the next year.
The mid-range game was a great deal of success for you last year. Where did that come from?
It's not as far as the three-point line. So, I mean, I think I'm just more comfortable taking that shot. I'm very, very comfortable in that shot, honestly. And I think it's a lost art in our game. I think everybody's depending on the paint, layups, dunks, and just threes. And I feel like it's a court. It's a whole basketball court. You can't just ignore the fact that that's a – if that. A lot of people say it's probably one of the worst shots, but if it's wide open, I'm going to take it. And, yeah.
How different a player are you today than you were in your first 2 years in Denver?
Definitely different just because mentality-wise, mindset. You know, I've went through a lot early in my career, and honestly, it's made me a lot stronger player. And I used to drive myself crazy on basketball, but now honestly I give myself time away from basketball. Like 3 hours is basketball, the next 4 hours is okay, I can be with my family or friends and watch a movie or something like that, and not just more so just drive myself crazy about basketball.
And I'll end on this and then build off it next time we talk. What are those things that you like to do off the court?
Like I said, movies is my probably number one thing, watching Netflix series, bowling, top golf, which I'm not any good at, but it's just something fun to do.
Excuse me. Manuel, really a pleasure to meet you. Look forward to talking to you.
All right, thank you very much.
Hopefully you went to the store to get your Pioneer Day stuff taken care of. If you didn't, you can stop by the store at 62 South and 20th East, and there's new stores opening. There's a new little mini store that's in downtown Salt Lake, and there is a new one going in the Gateway. Why the store? Well, because DJ Bowler Jack was one of those baggers that I used to love. I didn't know about this. I found out. I talk about it all the time, how great it is when you go by and you see the high school kids are bagging the bags and taking them out for some of the older folks that are there as customers, and it makes you get a really nice feeling of the community and all that. Well, guess what? I popped that out on the internet and was talking about it. And sure enough, I find out that good old DJ Bowler Jack was once a bagger at the store. The new store, by the way, is at 900 South and 161 West. That's 900 South, 161 West. It's a small version. And then the Gateway store will be opening here shortly. The new one just opened up, and they do have mudslide cookies. That was what I asked. So stop by at 900 South, 161 West. Just opened up. Earlier this week, I think it was. It was on last Friday. It just opened up. So that's at 900 South, 161 West. It's the store. Check out all their great stuff. If you go to the 6200 South and 20th East, it's got all the steaks and everything you need for the barbecue that you might be having today, and all the great cake de fleurs and the local products as well. It's all at the store, 6200 South and 20th East. Now down at 900 South and 161 East is a little mini store. And then the Gateway opening here shortly. So please stop by the store. Time now for the summer interview series with Ron Boone. So, Ron, yesterday we ended our conversation about Gobert. I found this little note, and you made the point you think he's going to be a lot more effective. And then after you mentioned that, I went and played around and looked some stuff up. I thought this – he shot 70-plus percent when on the floor without Derek Favors last year. And he shot about 61% when he was on the floor with Favors last year.
So either way, those numbers are great. You think?
Yeah, it tells me, though, that if there's not another big in there to clog the middle and you now have four shooters, that he could have a mammothly efficient year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You remember, and I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, you and I had this conversation about how Quinn used Rudy, how the team got so concerned about the pick and roll for the Jazz and how they were switching, and they were switching early and trying to take away Joe Ingles going from right to left, using his left hand. And now Quinn started to use that little flip move with Rudy, going over like he's going to step the screen and then flip to the basket and was able to come up with some plays. I think that was the way we beat the Houston Rockets that one year. And I bring that up because I think Quinn's going to have some options now to be more effective or more use different things now with Rudy in order to get him close enough to the basket to score.
We only saw him a little bit in the Eastern Conference, and I think Joe Ingles actually got the best of Bogdanovich at one point in time. Do you have any thoughts on him? I mean, he's a player that can actually play with the ball in his hands and do a bunch of things there.
Well, the reason I'm excited about him is that, like what we talked about yesterday, is the fact that he can, you know, you can push the ball ahead of him and he can, for the most part, make a play, which is something that, you know, Derek could not do, even though, you know, he tried, he worked very, very hard at shooting the three there as well, trying to elevate his game. But this is his game. I mean, this is the way that what do you guys call him, Bonjo?
They called him Bogey. Does that mean anything from three is a triple bogey?
Oh, we don't want to talk like that. that's the part of the game we don't like.
We're not allowed to be referencing triple bogeys. All right, I'll make sure yeah, we don't call that a triple bogey.
Yeah, but you can see how effective he's going to be. The big thing is that does he start? Does he come off the bench? I mean, you know, where does he, you know, fit in, you know, at the beginning of the year?
So right now, the power forwards for the Utah Jazz are some probable combination of Bojan Bogdanovic, Royce O'Neal, maybe a little Joe Ingles, George Niang. Can we still be elite defensively being that small? Is Rudy so great that we can still be elite defensively?
I think we'll be quicker. We should be a little more different type of schemes that Quinn can use in order to be that effective. And what that will do, we'll be able to probably keep Rudy a little closer to the basket. Meaning this, you know, you watch teams fake or camouflage switches and then the big man rotates back to the middle of the floor or something like that, you know. And I think they'll be able to use Rudy a lot more like that. And that is a very good question. Now, how important is it for the Jazz to have better perimeter defensive players, on-ball defensive players, with the type of schemes that Quinn wants to use? I mean, that could be effective there as well.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. What's your thoughts on the bench unit? So they added Ed Davis, kind of the consummate veteran. They added Jeff Green, I guess should be listed in that power forward mix. He could probably start there. Sorry, mm-hmm. I should have listed him in that group as well, but I do think there'll be a lot of power forward minutes in that out of those smaller groups. What's your Emmanuel Mudiay, a veteran, joins him. What's your thoughts on this bench unit that they've built of I think that, you know, for the most part, it's kind of, you talked about on earlier this week, is, you know, it's adults. They've added a lot of adults to this roster.
Yeah, and I think that's very, very important right now because the Jazz have put themselves in a position to win now. And with the moves that they made, they put themselves in a great position. I've given the bench some thought. And it should be stronger. Not sure what player is going to demand more minutes than the other. But the fact that Quinn will have some options now on how to use players, I think, is very, very important to the success of this team. I think the most important thing for us, and we'll get a chance to see and have our own opinions in training camp, but until they get in the games, especially at the beginning of the year, you know, how fast, how quickly they can get off to a good start, what players separate themselves from you know, the other, with the experience of Niang and the other players, Royce O'Neal, the fact that they've been in this system, will they show a little bit better than some of the other players? But the options I think that Quinn has, and believe me, I guarantee you, he's given us a lot of things. He's probably working right now, don't you think, on trying to make sure that, you know, these players are in the right position. I'm excited about the bench. I think the bench is going to be stronger than last year. You talked about shooting, but I was trying to remember, Dave, how good of a defensive player is Moody? I know he was fifth player picked in the draft, somewhere in there. That.
Yeah, I mean, Moody is a whole conversation in of to himself. All right, how about I just tell the entire Emmanuel Mudiay story that we've talked about earlier and get into his basketball with Ron in just 1 second. Ron probably doesn't have all of it. Want to mention a great Utah company on this fabulous Pioneer Day and give a shout-out to my friends over at Shamrock Auto. Rob Taylor is Shamrock. For those who don't know, I used to call him Rob Thomas, the Matchbox 20 guy, and I've finally gotten over that. Anyway, so they're out. Shamrock Auto is out in Pleasant Grove. The backstory in Shamrock Auto is Rob and his crew built this up many years back, and a few years back. I mean, not 100. He's not like in, you know, like, not like 50. He was in the car buying process, and he was like, he's got a bunch of other little businesses, and he was like, you know, we can do this better. And they've become just the great home for used cars. He's got people coming from out of state. He's got people that call him up and say to him, you know what, this is what I want. And he goes and gets it for him. I love the fact that when Rob started it, the first thing he did is he went and got a mechanic to be his buyer so that he could check out every car and know they were going to be as good as they could be. And you can see that in all of their rankings, that the model that Rob wanted to build was this better experience, quick experience, because we can be small, lean, and that fashion. And then also just have a great cars that he knows are there. Most of the cars are 6 to 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles, Suburbans, Yukons, big SUVs generally. But you can also literally give Rob a call and he'll go find out and get you what you need. Give him a call, 801-319-2250. Tell him you're with Locked On Jazz. They've got some lifetime coolers out there they'll help you out with. 801-319-2250. He believes that Shamrock is a no-pressure, better place. I always love Rob says it's a big deal the customer doesn't buy. It's not a big deal if the customer – let me rephrase what Rob says. He says it isn't a big deal if the customer doesn't buy from us. It's a big deal that we take care of the needs of the customers. Everyone at Shamrock works hard for every customer to get the great car or truck that fits their needs and their budget. Stop by Pleasant Grove and give Rob a call if you have something you're looking for. 801-319-2250. All right. More with my friend Ron Boone, and specifically about the topic of much of today's show, Emmanuel Mudiay. And that is, I don't know who he is as a player, and I'm not sure he knows who he is as a player. I think he might have begun to learn this year in New York, which is not the greatest environment to learn. But what's incredible to me about him, Ron, is when I went back and researched him, so he comes to the U.S. from the Congan Civil War. He's in school in Dallas, Fort Worth area. He ends up going to Deion Sanders High School. But Deion Sanders High School ends up having all of their teams basically ruled ineligible due to illegal recruiting. So he hardly plays in high school. He is limited before his experience gets to high school. He and his brothers kind of play. They're in pretty abject poverty growing up in the United States. Better than obviously where they were when his mom had to escape from the Civil War and send the kids off. I mean, it's a crazy, you know, one of those unbelievable stories. So he's limited in how much coaching and time he's had. He's played with his brothers. He then goes to high school. He doesn't get to play. He plays some AAU. He's recruited by Larry Brown at SMU, but he gets offered $1.2 million to go play in China. They have no money. Larry Brown's sales pitch to him is, you can wait 7 months for your $1.2 million, come play for me. And, you know, and an 18-year-old kid was like, I ain't waiting 7 months for that. Like, of course not. I'm not either at 48, by the way, if someone wants to know. And so he goes and he plays in China for like 4 or 5 games and sprains his ankle. Okay, so he has, like, you think Dante has no experience playing the game. This kid has, like, no experience. He then gets drafted 7th to Denver, and you know what they do? They start him for 68 games and play him 30 minutes a night, and he's terrible. I can't imagine why.
Well, you think about that. That team was not very good at that point. Was not very good.
No, right.
So their thinking, I'm sure, was trying to let Moutier get as much experience early in his career as possible, let him learn on the fly, make mistakes, and, you know, that type of thing, and maybe he would be ready the next year or maybe 2 years down the line. He just, without that experience, David, he's just not very good. I mean, he wasn't very good.
So last year he goes to New York. He goes from shooting his first year he shot 36%. His second year he shot 38%. His third year he shot 39%. Then all of a sudden last year he shoots 45%. Okay, like, where'd that come from? He's not a particularly good 3-point shooter, and he starts taking a bunch of mid-range shots, and he starts making them, frankly, at a little bit of an unusual level. Like, he's a career 37% mid-range shooter who's now making 49%. Like, that seems pretty unlikely that that's going to be sustainable, but it does seem as though he went, okay, let me find what I can do well. He's on a crappy New York team, and in the first half of the season, he was actually one of the most efficient pick-and-roll players. With that said, I got no idea who he is. Like, he's 6'5", 200. He came on the minimum because there wasn't really a great market for him, and he wanted to learn the game, and I have no idea. Like, but he's still also 23 years old. So if he doesn't defend, he's just not going to play, I would guess. But I have no idea who he is as a player. There are some signs of massive improvement last year on one of the worst teams in the league. And that's a pretty tough way to believe someone's going to make, you know, that's the way to look at things.
So what do you do? You see a guy that's improved every year. You gave those numbers, and he's improved every year of his shooting, and to the point where you feel like he is getting better. You feel like he's getting a grip on what the NBA is all about and how he can be an impact in the game, which I think is very, very important. I mean, there's guys that use Reggie Evans for example. I just saw him playing 3-on-3, playing the same way in this 3-on-3 competition as he did, you know, during the year. But he found a way, by being physical and rebounding the basketball and playing defense, in order to make himself better and stay in the league. Now, the growth here of Moutier, as far as his shooting is concerned, it obviously is getting better. So what do? You take a chance on a guy like that. If 3-point shooting is not my, it's not my thing, then I need to be better at the 2-point range in order to help and make an impact while I'm out there on the floor. So that's the way I look at that. And hopefully, there's other parts of his game that will stand out more so than maybe that two point percentage that has increased, as you just mentioned.
The other thing about Moutier, I think, that maybe is the biggest transition that he's had to make is, if you go read about his draft stuff, it's all about elite athlete and incredible this, and he's not an elite athlete at all. Once he got to the NBA level, he was not an elite athlete, and his rim finishing shows that. He's a 50% rim finisher, and that to me is the way you kind of know whether someone's an elite athlete. Like, Gordon Hayward's rim finishing was always incredibly high, which told you, like, okay, this kid's like an athlete with the best of them. Moutier's rim finishing is not very good, and that's another one where I just think he's probably learned, okay, that's not my forte. He actually took a lot more shots last year at the rim than he did in previous years, but I think he's just kind of figuring out who he is as a player, and we'll see if in this system with a lot less pressure, whether he's able to help a lot more. Let me go back to Donovan. Go ahead.
Let me follow in, then, you know, you can go to something else. But he's 23 years old, right?
Yep.
So his growth period, it's happening right now for him. So the Jazz, if there was any doubts or if there was any concern, they took a chance on a guy that they think has now, you know, is now getting into that growth year, to the point where, you know, he can maybe be effective and help the basketball team. So that's the way I look at that, is that, you know, at 23 years old, you know, maybe there's still something there that we're missing.
Moutier's played 246 games in his career. Exum's played 204. Those are probably the two wild cards for the Jazz season this year. What contributions
Absolutely.
Can they get out of those two guys?
What's that?
Those are the two wild cards. I think everybody else, you kind of know what contribution you're going to get. Those two, I think, are probably the wild cards. You're not sure on what you're going to get.
Yeah, strictly because they haven't, for different reasons, Dante growth years was because of injuries. And for Moutier, his growth years is just the fact that he just didn't have any kind of experience at all because of, you know, coming out of high school and you know, just didn't have enough games under his belt to the point where you could really get a fair assessment of how good he could be.
All right, I'm going to talk your language here for a second and then leave the topic about Donovan for tomorrow's show, and then we'll talk NBA in general tomorrow on tomorrow's show. Bill Simmons, who's a national NBA or just podcaster, was on with his podcast, and he said he was concerned about the Jazz because he thinks they're soft. What's your thought on that?
That is the first I've ever heard of anything like that, with the Jazz being soft. And where that comes from, I don't know. I didn't think we were soft at all. Maybe he's playing a different game than what we've seen.
The loss of Jay Crowder and the loss of Derek Favors, I would guess, be what makes him decide that we're that we're soft.
So the players that we've added, he thinks, okay, we've gone from being a very strong and physical basketball team to now being soft because of the type of players that we have. We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, if that's his opinion, how soft can you be when you can't touch guys anymore?
Right.
Don't get me into that, David.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can shoot now. I'd rather be able to shoot and be soft than I would be, right? Like in this where the league is right now, wouldn't you rather be able to shoot and be a little soft than being tough without being able to shoot?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt, you know, that would be the way that I would prefer to see it, even though, you know, I think veteran players, old guys like myself, don't like, you know, some of the questionable contact that's made out there on the floor. But if you're going to be soft, you know, you want to have guys that can still put the ball in the basket. So they'll be protected by the officials.
What has me the most excited about the Utah Jazz next season, plus what is it going to take for Donovan Mitchell to take the next steps in his career? We'll get on both those things on our next show coming up with Ron Boone as the summer interview series continues. Plus, we'll talk general NBA. It's all coming up. This has been another edition of Locked On Jazz on the Locked On Podcast Network.